So today is the final service in a month dedicated to reconciliation. We're reminded of the commitment of the leaders of our faith tradition to reconcile with all those affected by the legacy of the residential school system in Canada. I'd like to use that as the backdrop this morning as I explore reconciliation in a more general sense. Reconciliation is a difficult process for most of us. And I think before we attempt to reconcile over a specific circumstance, it's helpful to look at the more general case. I want to say that there may be people listening this morning that have suffered directly as a result of the Canadian residential school system. I hope you'll understand me this morning if I address the majority of this congregation who have not been so directly affected. For it's that latter group, the majority of Canadians who need to absorb the message and the need for the process of reconciliation. So many of you will know by now that my spiritual journey was profoundly affected by many years that I spent in the Al-Anon program. This is a program based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's tailored for those who have been affected by alcoholism in another person. Parent, a spouse, a child, or a close friend. These 12-step programs have proven to be profoundly effective over more than 75 years. But like all human endeavors, they have their detractors, and I acknowledge that these programs do not work for everyone. But that said, there is much to be learned from their success. For someone struggling in a dysfunctional relationship or living with the effects of past dysfunctional family, reconciliation is central to the healing process. Reconciliation in this sense may mean healing a relationship with another human being, but more commonly, it means reconciling yourself to a situation, accepting the limits of your ability to control the situation, realizing how you have been affected, breaking old patterns, and learning new responses to the challenges of life. Parallels between the effects of alcoholism and the effect of the residential school system may not be obvious at first, but I'd like you to think about it for a minute. In both cases, there are victims of the dysfunctional system, and in both cases, there are those who are in apparent control, those who create, and in some way, appear to benefit from the unhealthy situation. But in both cases, no one benefits in the end. Both parties suffer. And this isn't, of course, to say that the suffering is by any measure equal on both sides. Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous recognize that reconciliation is important to recovery. And they map out this 12-step program that is meant to be worked sequentially one step at a time. What struck me was that the reconciliation portion of the program only begins at step 9. There are 8 steps before you make direct amends to the people you have harmed. So, that begs the question. What sorts of things and what steps must precede reconciliation? I think the first step, reconciliation, begins when we open our eyes, or have our eyes opened, to the injustices around us. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission did not come about because of the goodwill of the Canadian government and the mass of its citizens. It came about because the victims fought tough legal battles in our courts and won judgments that our government and the mass of non-Indigenous citizens could not ignore. This sad situation has provided us all with a moment of serendipity, an opportunity for our spiritual growth. Such openings come as a result of dialogue or communication. Scott Peck has written that the overall purpose of human communication is, or should be, reconciliation. It should ultimately serve to lower or remove the walls of misunderstanding which unduly separate us human beings one from another. I'd like to digress here for a moment. to relate a story that just happened here yesterday, Saturday morning. I was reminded that reconciliation is a word loaded with specific theological meaning, meaning in the Christian faith. I had my eyes opened in a conversation here over breakfast. There's a young Mi'kmaq man who lives in our neighborhood. Sometimes people that drop in on Saturday morning, especially if they find out that I'm the minister, they feel obligated to assure me that they are good Christians. It's an unnecessary assumption on their part. So this young man, a little nervous and without any prompting from me, told me that he believed that Jesus had died for his sins and that he had been reconciled with God through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. But there was a detectable questioning in his voice. He went on to tell me that he had seen a Facebook posting from another First Nations person that made sense to him as well, but said it was not Jesus Christ who had died for his sins. It was his ancestors. It was his ancestors who had died for his sins. I'm still thinking about the implications of that comment. The point here is that simple dialogue can be the beginning of a journey. Dialogue is not always polite conversation over pancakes and sausages. Scott Peck goes on to say, confrontive, even angry communication is sometimes necessary to bring into focus the clear reality of those barriers between peoples. Bring those into clear focus before we can begin to knock them down. In the process of community building, for instance, individual differences must first be allowed to surface, and they must be fought over, so that the groups can ultimately learn to accept and celebrate, and thereby transcend them. In a previous sermon this month, I explored reconciliation as a spiritual practice. And I remind you that spiritual practices are those practices undertaken consciously to make affirming, life-promoting connections and to strengthen those connections. Last week we sang the hymn, Let Love Continue Long. I hadn't heard that hymn before, and I was intrigued by the words, particularly in the third verse. If we in love unite, debate can cause no strife. For with this love in sight, disputes enrich our life. For with this bond of human love, disputes can mean a richer life. So true reconciliation has to begin with a desire to make yourself whole, to make your life richer by connecting with other human beings. There can be no hope of reconciling with another human being who is suffering without a sincere desire to connect with that person or persons. The desire springs from a recognition that you cannot be the person that you want to be if you choose to ignore another person's suffering. When we open our eyes, or when we have them open, to the injustice around us, then we realize that we are not in right relation with those who are suffering. This idea of right relation is often attributed to Confucius. The right relationship we're talking about here is a voluntary, mutually respectful relationship between individuals where both parties benefit. So the opening of our eyes is a matter of learning and acceptance, and accepting the facts about the situation before us. When my counseling psychologist first suggested to me that I was a product of an alcoholic family, I rejected the idea totally. When he told me that he had never seen his parents intoxicated, I told him he was the one from a dysfunctional family. Virtually everyone that I knew had seen their parents drunk, or at least I assumed that they had. In the case of the residential schools, it's taken the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission years of gathering personal accounts and studying the records to open the collective eyes of Canadians. But all this work is in danger of being for naught if we allow the incessant press of the news of the day to displace this story from our consciousness. We need not only to have our eyes opened, but to have our gaze continually refocused on the injustice. What is it that cries out in us for the correction of injustice? We know we need that correction. It's part of reconciliation. There must be some form of faith based on the idea of justice. In Al-Anon, or AA, there's reference to the acceptance of a higher power. Some are uncomfortable with that idea because it sounds like acceptance of an all-powerful God, a vision of God that they may reject. Well, reconciliation does not require a belief in God, but it does require a belief in justice. Justice based on some principles that transcend the idea of a totally random and morally ambivalent universe. The cause of reconciliation requires more than our belief in justice. It requires that we make a conscious choice that our lives will be guided by the principles of justice. We give meaning to our lives when we reconcile our actions with our faith system. A true faith in justice requires us to act on that faith. If, as most Unitarian Universalists claim, we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, then we must reconcile ourselves to all other human beings. Those who have the same worth and dignity that we claim for ourselves. We're called to seek out those who are suffering injustice and reconcile with them. All of the foregoing steps require a sense of humility, a sense that our individual life is no more important than the life of any other person on the planet. When we do that, we can humbly begin to forgive ourselves and others for the injustices that we've allowed. So as I near the end of the sermon, allow me to recap. Only when all of these steps have been completed are we ready to begin to reconcile. And what applies to the individual applies to our nation. We need national leaders who are wise. First, we must have our eyes open to the injustice, sometimes in painful dialogue. Second, we must see reconciliation as part of our own spiritual growth, as something important to us if we're to grow as human beings. Third, we must have faith in a principle like justice that transcends the principles guiding an apparent random or morally ambivalent universe. Fourth, we must be humble, accepting that the inherent worth and dignity of every person means that our needs should not supersede the need for a dignified life for any other person. And finally, we must choose to reconcile our own belief system with actions. So if reconciliation is step 9 in a 12-step program, you may well ask what the last 3 steps are. Steps that follow reconciliation. The 10th step is to continue to monitor our behavior, promptly admitting and taking action when we find that we were wrong. And the 11th step is to seek to improve our contact with that source of transcending principles that we choose to give meaning in our lives. I want to read that again. The 11th step is to seek to improve our contact with the source of those transcending principles that we choose to give meaning in our lives. That's what's important. We have to make that choice. And it could be principles like justice, love, and compassion. And the final step is to carry that message to others and to practice these steps in all our affairs. And so I close with a message that we all have work to do, to prepare for and to follow through on our own program of reconciliation. It is joyous work. It is work that energizes and gives meaning to our lives, but it is work. It requires focus, and it requires effort. Reconciliation will not happen without our determined and focused effort. May it be so.